And hello again, I'm Ian Masters. Welcome back to Background Briefing. And we are now going to change the subject somewhat, talk about another ongoing disaster that could get worse if according to the Director of National Intelligence, Muammar Gaddafi, and his clan and his military assets that he controls will prevail. That was the judgment of the Director of National Intelligence, General Clapper, just on Friday. I'm joined here by Dirk van der Valle, who is the professor in the Department of Government at Dartmouth College. He's the author of A History of Modern Libya and Libya Since Independence, Oil and State Building. And also joining him is Ali Abdellatif Ahmida, who is the chair of the Political Science Department at the University of New England. He's the author of The Making of Modern Libya and Post-Orientalism, Critical Reviews in North African Social and Cultural History. Let me begin with you, Dirk van der Valle. I guess the prospect of Gaddafi winning and the freedom fighters, or the rebels, as I think they're rather misnamed as, clearly they've lost the oil port of Brega, and there's a possibility that Gaddafi could continue, as his son has promised, to drive all of the rebels back into the east, and that would, of course, create a massive refugee problem for Egypt. Let's go through that scenario. Do you think it's going to happen? And two, the idea of this guy winning and thumbing his nose at the world is pretty unpalatable, isn't it?
Well, I think the first issue, of course, is indeed, as you mentioned, the kind of changing dynamic that we've seen over the last few days. Initially, we had an insurgency, and that insurgency was really quite badly organized by nature, almost. And over the last few days, as indeed you said, the Gaddafi forces have managed to turn it back and to go eastward, so to speak. Now, in a sense, we've started to see an international reaction to it that was really absent also, and that, I think, will also play a very important role in what happens in the days and the week ahead. And that is the Arab League, for the first time, has really weighed in. And my understanding is that, in a sense, the approbation of the Arab League here was necessary for other actors, particularly the Europeans, but also the United States, for weighing in on this. And so we've seen Secretary Gates, for example, very reluctant to think about a no-fly zone. But my impression is that the hand of the United States, and particularly as the Arab League now has weighed in, but perhaps also the African Union, which is meeting in the next few days. And then, of course, ultimately, perhaps the United Nations, where China and Russia have been traditionally opposed to this, but their position, I think, is weakening a little bit as a result of what the Arab League has done. It could very well be that we see a number of initiatives that, first of all, perhaps would include a partly no-fly zone. But beyond that, I think it would create a kind of a permissive environment that several countries will then use to, if not officially, at least in unofficially, get some weapons into the hands of the rebels, primarily coming in through Egypt, I would think.
And let me turn to Ali Abdellatif Ahmida. Just following on from Kirk van der Valle, is it also possible that not just weapons, of which I believe are already flowing in, is it possible that once this no-fly zone, and if presumably Russia and China can be shamed into going along with the rest of the world, and clearly the Arab League weighing in helps in that direction, what about the possibility of the British? I believe the British and the Italians have some intelligence resources there. I don't think the U.S. does, but Egypt, for example, is there any possibility of not just helping arm the rebels, because that may have consequences later? What about the possibility of some kind of covert intervention with maybe Egyptian special forces or somebody to take out this family of criminals?
Well, what we have now is really imbalanced in terms of power. You know, the conflict now is going on. In one sense, the Gaddafi regime lost all kind of moral standing and legitimacy in the eyes of many, many Libyans. And also condemnation in the Arab world and also worldwide after its disastrous, brutal shooting on the protesters in the eastern region, and also after that, the western region. So in that sense, that's one side of the conflict. But at the same time, the rebels, as Derek mentioned, they are really they don't have arms. They have volunteers. There are so many officers who defected to the side of the uprising, but they still are ill-equipped, ill-trained to face an army or the security brigades that Gaddafi is using right now. Now, this is really, I think this is how the scene seems to me right now. At the same time, the United States has been, you know, while condemning the shooting and the brutal repression, they have called for Gaddafi to step down. In reality, I think there is a sense of realism which trying to calculate what will happen if we intervene. And keep in mind that the United States and the Western government allowed the Gaddafi regime to be rehabilitated, but nobody paid attention to the internal situation. So I think these our forces are trying to fight over the future, struggle over the future of the countries, stick to Gaddafi or change the regime and side with the people. The what I would see is very, very important right now is the Arab League took a decisive move for their, not necessarily for democratic, you know, reasons, but for their own calculation. But it's very important to keep that in mind. What's needed now is aid, maybe to consult with the council in the Libyan National Council in Benghazi about arms if needed, and also maybe the unthinkable. At the same time, I think negotiating with the Gaddafi regime to maybe to have resolution, perhaps we didn't think about that earlier, to maybe step down, go into exile, or some sort of negotiations if that's, you know, to resolve the stalemate. You know, I think that might be really a worthwhile trying. But right now, I don't think the Gaddafi regime, as we know it, and the leadership is gonna, you know, just say we're gonna stop now. They think that they could weather this storm, repress the rest of the country as they did in the past, and they look at other examples maybe that happened in Libyan past also, or maybe in the case of a country like Syria or other places.
Well, let me turn to Kurt Vandevelde, who's written a piece in Foreign Policy, How Not to Intervene in Libya. Your main points are you cannot divide and conquer, don't fall into Gaddafi's trap, take it slow, human rights matter, and so does oil. My fear, Dirk, is that Gaddafi actually has a lot more military power than he's even used so far, and that he's about to unleash that. So do you think that there's going to be more reverses to the freedom fighters in the short run?
I think so. The momentum at this particular point in time is certainly on Gaddafi's side. But again, that doesn't mean that in the long run it necessarily will be, particularly if we see some actions taken like a no-fly zone. Again, the no-fly zone, in a sense, is not that terribly important by itself, because the real damage against the rebels is being done with, you know, hardware on the ground, the tanks, and so on. But I think the move by the Arab League really, in a sense, opens up a kind of what I would call a permissive environment for regime, for governments in the region particularly, to kind of join in and more openly face the Gaddafi government. So in that piece in Foreign Policy, I was extremely skeptical of open military intervention, particularly by the United States, both in light of the kind of exposure we already have in Iraq and Afghanistan, but also because it really plays very clearly into the narrative that Gaddafi has always used, you know, that the West will come and occupy the country for its resources. So I think the response, and I think in the end, some kind of military response is going to be unavoidable, whether it's a kind of open official or whether it's through all kinds of deliveries and training of special forces, by special forces, and so on, from a number of Arab countries. But I would not be surprised, for example, to see one of the Arab countries at one point, particularly Egypt, of course, is the important player here, to really step up and take a more open position than what we've seen so far. Keeping in mind, of course, that Egypt has its own turmoil, but if you look at the kind of weapons that Egypt now has, that weapons are, by the way, delivered and have been given or sold to them under United States military packages, that those are precisely the kind of weapons that could be used to quell, to stop the Gaddafi regime. And so I do see changes happening, even though the immediate advantage, I think, still belongs to the Gaddafi side.
And Ali Abdelatif Ahmida, you mentioned the possibility of some negotiated settlement. Now, apparently, I don't know whether this offer is still on the table. I think Chavez in Venezuela and Ortega in Nicaragua are both apparently admirers of Colonel Gaddafi and would be willing to extend their hospitality to him. What's your sense of what his price of his exit would be? I imagine he's got billions and billions stored abroad.
Well, I think right now he feels like he could crush the uprising. So I don't know if he's going to negotiate now. But he knows he's been also a very, very shrewd tactician when it comes to security. So I believe that this might be some option that worth pursuing. However, there is another issue that we haven't talked about. It's not just training the uprising's army and the Council of Benghazi and under the leadership of the defected officers. The defense minister now is a general by the name of Omar al-Hariri, who was original a member of the Free Officers Union's organization that toppled the monarchy. But I think also important that there will be the international community will rein on the United States, particularly to rein on the North African countries, especially Algeria, and also the African countries that might send mercenaries or supporters to Gaddafi. Especially we know Gaddafi has a lot of capital, social capital, due to his really long support for the African Union. As a matter of fact, whether we like it or not, he was behind the African Union in many ways. So he has a lot of support outside. That worries me quite a bit, because it means that in addition to the cash he has, the security brigades that he still has, he has also the ability to buy more mercenaries to his side.
And just in closing, Dirk van der Velde, do you think, given that there thousands have been killed so far, probably, and more will be killed if Gaddafi retakes the east, what kind of threshold are we talking about here in terms of a kind of sitting back and watching another Rwanda unfold?
Well, quite obviously, no matter which way this goes, whether, Gaddafi on the one hand reoccupies the east, which would, I think, be very, very bloody and would lead to all kinds of settlement, of course. But I think we should even think much further down the road, assuming that Gaddafi, for example, gets overthrown. Then this kind of state that he has created over the last 40 years, a very peculiar state where in which no opposition or anything was allowed, in which people willy-nilly had to cooperate with the regime. All of this, I think, particularly if the regime were to go, will lead to what I would think would be a lot of settling of scores among people who have either worked for Gaddafi or against Gaddafi. And I think if there's one thing that the United States, particularly and the international community, perhaps should already be thinking about, particularly in the case of Gaddafi.
We've run out of time here, but I thank both of you for joining us, Ali Abdullah Ratif and Kurt van der Velde. Sorry we've run out of time. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank my producers, Spencer Downing and Kim Nassiter. Our theme music is by Los Lobos. You can hear this program, sign up for podcasts, and contact me at ianmasters.com. I'm also writing a daily blog there, so go to ianmasters.com and click on blog. You can comment there, and I'd love to hear from you. And I'll be back again tomorrow with Background Briefing. Bye for now.